something about bail bonds comes to mind. Was there a principle on that had to do with making it easier, more easy? What was it? Some of the judges, as I remember, were putting outrageous amounts.
Yeah, they were.
Wasn't this resolved by both a court rule that became the practice and some legislative attempt to...
Well, that's a classic example of the breadth of the work on the Supreme Court that I earlier said I love. Those of us who had been on the fringes of the, what used to be called the Clinton Street Bar, which was the slang name given to the lawyers who exclusively practiced in the Recorder's Court in the city of Detroit, knew how this bail bond system worked. And there was, there drifted up to Lansing and to the Supreme Court when I was there, kind of an indistinct odor that there might be something wrong, strictly speaking, in the way in which the bail bond system worked, and the suspicion, no evidence presented during my time, but the suspicion that the judges in the criminal courts all over Michigan, not just the Recorder's Court, who had to raise money for re-election and who were reporting contributions from bail bondsmen, might be in a situation in which they could be too easily compromised when a bond was to be set. Without having any evidence of specific wrongdoing before us, we were convinced that an idea had come to fruition that should be adopted in Michigan, and that is to re-examine this assumption that if you don't make a defendant post a high bond, he won't appear. And so we got into some academic studies that have been done in the East, the Vera Foundation in New York City, in the New York City criminal courts, the Manhattan Project, not the atom bomb, another Manhattan Project, had studied the non-appearance rate of persons on bond, had come to some conclusions, one of which was you don't need to force a person to mortgage his house to buy a bail bond from an insurance company and a bondsman. So really, after some very comprehensive studies for which I thought our court deserved considerable credit, we adopted this rule that the courts were no longer to require a bail bondsman to post a bond, and that a person, depending on circumstances and depending on the nature of the case, could simply post 10% of the bond himself in cash or some property. And we weren't sure. This put the bail bondsman out of business, effectively, in the state of Michigan.
Did it work satisfactorily?
Absolutely. It's in place today. The legislature has codified it, I think.
Before getting too far away from the matter of overseeing the judges, trial court judges, and the bar generally, I wanted to ask if you noticed that when the bar dues, remember the disciplinary process is financed out of bar dues, when the bar dues went up the last time, now I think it could have been June, that recent, that two of the members of the court in effect descended from the I found this in the fine print of the Bar Journal one day. One of them being Charles Leonard Levin, who said, instead of $50, I'll go for $15 unless you go ahead and build up the budget of the disciplinary arms of the bar. Do you remember that?
Very well. You've jogged my memory. What I started to say earlier and then lost track of my thought was that very subject when I mentioned a few moments ago that I loved the work of the superintendents because I'd had the privilege of practicing law and serving the lower court. The Bar Association's relationship to the Supreme Court was one of some tension all the time I was there. The State Bar of Michigan is led by a lawyer of a very strong personality, Michael Frank, and a brilliant guy and a professional bar bureaucrat of the first order. And I don't mean that in a denigrating way.
I think I understand. He came from New York.
It is a bureaucracy.
And he was recruited for that reason.